Support for Politics and Public Policy Reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
It's In the Moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Steve Zwentke, filling in for Lori Walsh. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds met with constituents Tuesday afternoon at Grand Living on Lake Lorain in Sioux Falls for coffee and a question and answer session. After an engaging hour of discussion, which ranged from immigration to Russian interference in the most recent presidential election, Senator Rounds sat down with In the Moment host Lori Walsh for a one-on-one conversation. The conversation picked up where the coffee left off as Rounds focused back in on Russian meddling in our elections and how the audience had such a diverse list of topics on which they wanted him to speak.
Well, they were. And could they do it again? And what are we doing to get ahead of them? Those are good questions. And so I just appreciate the fact that they did it in such a fashion that we had a lot of different questions. But yeah, I mean, it's not like the interest wasn't there before, but they're being more selective and more specific in terms of what the questions are. Electoral college is a regular one. Not so much the validity of elections. That's new.
They wanted to hear you say that in a yes or no answer, whether you thought Russia had meddled and would continue to do so. They wanted to hear you answer about whether a free press had value. Do you find that people are craving to hear that sort of reassurance? Is that the wrong word?
It's surprising because I can't tell you how many times we've done that on national media to say there's no question but that Russia was meddling in the election. There's no question that they continue to do so. There is no one within the intelligence committee or within the intelligence community that isn't certain beyond a reasonable doubt that Russia continues to meddle in our affairs. And they're doing everything they can just to make us lose confidence in our process of determining our leaders. That's exactly what Russia wanted. And so part of what our job is to assure people that, look, we've taken some extra steps that we haven't done in the past to provide resources to the states to be able to address it. But we're also not going to federalize our election system because that would make it easier for someone to come in and to manipulate it. The states do a good job, but this will give them the resources and the expectation that not only will they have strong defenses against someone trying to get in and mess with the election machinery, but that every election will now be auditable. And by that, I mean, like in South Dakota, we still have paper ballots. Well, that's the way all states should be. And you can tabulate those paper ballots. You can set up an electronic scorecard if you want for the immediate determination. But if there's any question, you want to be able to go back and look at the paper ballots. And then everybody can see what that paper ballot looks like to make sure that their vote has been registered correctly. And if you do have any question, in order to maintain that confidence, you can go back and actually manually count them if it becomes necessary. And that's part of the expectation of the states in using the money that we did appropriate. We appropriated over $380 million. That's based upon what a recommendation from Homeland Security was, so that each state could meet the guidelines of assurance that the process was fair.
You mentioned that some of that money not getting used. Where does that go through the Secretary of State's office in South Dakota? Do you know if we have accessed the available funds?
Yeah, probably not yet, because the states have 3 years in which to do so, and so they'll be able to actually go back in and look at what recommendations, you know, they want to use. We don't want them to just spend the money to spend it. We want them to actually look at, get the analysis completed, and then come back in and make the changes, and to do it right. So right now, I think the minimum for each state is $3 million. I doubt that the states would actually have had time to use it up, and we didn't want them to hurry. We wanted them to do it correctly.
You were at an ag roundtable in South Dakota this morning. What were some of the main takeaways of that? Did you talk about renewable fuel standard, or was it mostly trade and tariffs that people wanted to discuss?
It was both, because both of them impact commodity prices within our state. And look, we have about $21 billion right now of our economy that comes directly from ag. And anytime you see a drop in ag prices, that flows through the entire economy in South Dakota. We've had 5 years of declining farm income in this state. Farmers and ranchers got to see a break in this thing here, and they're going to get some pretty decent crops this year. But if we don't have enough of a price to even break even, we're going to have some banks that won't be able to loan money to these guys for operating next year. So the fact that first we had corn ethanol, the renewable fuel standard was not being met by the federal government. It was supposed to be at $15 billion. They're going to be under $14 billion from the way it looks. That hurts corn prices. And there's no excuse for that. Second of all, in the commodity wars that are going on, the trade wars that we're in the middle of right now, these same folks are on the tip of the spear. And it's their commodities that have been impacted with retaliation. We estimate right now, here in the first part of August, that our balance sheets for producers are down by about $750 million from March 1st until now. They were down as low as $750 million. I think right now we're at about $500 million down from March 1st until today. So it's come back a little bit, but soybeans have really been impacted by the tariffs that have been imposed by other countries. Just the threat of tariffs alone changed the market value of these beans. And if you didn't have numbers locked in a long time ago, you're not going to get anything locked in at this stage of the game, because beans going west right now, there's not even a bid on the beans going west today.
At the end of the conversation today, a woman asked you about children being separated, and she was so passionate. And one of the things, and you answered that the question that she was asking during the the coffee, but she said it keeps her up at night. What keeps you up at night?
Whether or not we're ready for the next cyber attack. Look, the next attack we have in the United States will probably be cyber-based. And so if you say, what's the next 9/11 or what's the next Pearl Harbor, it'll be a cyber-based attack against the United States. And the reason? Because we are very powerful in the air, on the land, and at sea. Our weaknesses are in space and in cyberspace. The least expensive domain in which to attack all of our other domains is in the cyber domain, because we have become very reliant on computers and on the interconnectedness of all things that are computer. We will see attempts to attack our financial services. We'll see attacks to attack our power grids. We'll see them on our infrastructure for water and sewer. We'll see them on our election systems. We'll see them on our transportation systems. They'll do everything they can to impact critical infrastructure that our Department of Defense relies on. They'll do everything they can to impede our access to space. Any one of those areas is critical, because we need them all. Today, our public policy is not set up to respond to a cyber attack in a timely fashion. We know it. We're trying to fix it. But we are outdated in our public policy, and we are desperately trying to get caught up on it so that we can not only detect it, but also stop it before it actually occurs. We are very good at being able to attribute who is creating the cyber attack. But once we know who it is, being able to go into third parties or to third party countries and stop something from an innocent, the bad guys, basically the real competitors in this, are Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. They won't attack our country directly from their countries to ours. They'll go in and manipulate computer systems in other countries that will then be used to infiltrate into our systems. When we know about attacks coming in today, our public policy is very diluted and very limited in terms of how we can respond to attacks that are coming from neutral third parties. We have to address that. And until we are appropriately addressing it, our adversaries know that that's a weak link in our defenses.
You have administrative support for that and congressional support. Moving in the right direction, is just that we have to move quickly, or are there messages that are not being heard?
We were successful in getting a part into the National Defense Authorization Act this year, one that came from our cyber subcommittee, which will recognize clandestine cyber operations as being part of traditional military activities and not something that would be disavowed by the Secretary of the Department. Those we now have, we are now recognizing those as being traditional military activities. That's going to help move in the right direction so that our military has the ability to go in and to offensively take out weaponized systems, even in third countries.
Senator Mike Rounds, thank you for your time today. You've been quite generous.
Thank you.